News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5, 807, Mobile Mornings. And we did have a lot of big, Bobby was talking about it, a big cluster of rain down at the bottom of the Mobile County this morning, and it just kind of dissipated. I mean, it was a big glob. You're thinking, where's that going to go? Turned out it just kind of dried up, rained itself out. But look for that pretty good chance of rain again today. And basically, Dr. Bill says it's going to be a summer pattern right through the weekend.
Yeah, I think he said right through September.
Maybe, yeah.
So get used to it. We are used to it, right?
Yeah. We've
been here for any amount of time.
That's right.
You know what the summer's like. Had a good conversation with Senator Tuberville. We normally don't have interviews until this hour, but the only availability is 7 o'clock. So I think we had a pretty good discussion. And in such a short interview, you know, you have certain things you want to get to. And when you're talking to a politician like Tuberville, and you'll hear him on the Jeff Poor Show, they know how to answer a question.
Yeah.
And maybe they don't know how to actually answer the question. But Tuberville did, but
each answer is about 3 minutes long.
Yeah, so they go on and on.
Yeah.
But he did provide some interesting information there, and I think it's really kind of fascinating watching. And he's not the only one. I'd love to see some statistics, because it seems like more members of Congress, more senators are running for their state's gubernatorial position than I've ever seen before. You have several. I think Marjorie Taylor Greene talking about running in Georgia, which, you know, good luck, right? Maybe she's popular enough for that in Georgia.
I don't know.
I know that's been part of the discussion. Tuberville's already thrown his hat in the ring. I think Blackburn in Tennessee saying she may run for governor of Tennessee. So Tuberville's not the only senator or I think some members of House also running that has to kind of, you know, answer to two bosses, right?
Yeah. So as he's running for governor, he's still going to be a member of the Senate. And so that's, you're right.
So when you vote on a bill, it's one thing if you're just senator and you say, yeah, I know this kind of hurts our state, but for the betterment of the country, we have to go through with this. And senators normally don't like to say that anyway. But when you're also running for governor, you really have to answer to how each bill affects your state, if that's what you're running for. So
you're right.
I think it's kind of fascinating to see Tuberville, and he's put up more of a more resistance to this one big beautiful bill than you would expect Tuberville to put up. And I think that's playing a role in it, is with Trump's big push to move a lot of these departments and economic assistance out of the federal government's hands and more to the state's hands, and kind of cover that gap, still giving grants to the states to get done with what they need to get done so they're not running completely out of money, but just be less, more hands-on, the federal government, that is. So I think Tuberville, and in particular, he's been talking about food stamps and what—
SNAP program.
The SNAP program, and I think I saw, what was it? The number of people in our state that are on the SNAP assistance program, more than 750,000 Alabamians, 1 in 7 residents of the state receive SNAP benefits. Would you have guessed that?
I would not have.
1 in 7 receive SNAP benefits. And we don't know what we'll end up having to pay as a state. We don't know how much the federal government will, you know, hang on to as those negotiations continue to go through. But that is something that Tuberville said he had an issue with in this bill. But as you heard him say on that interview last hour, he's going to vote for it. He said about 66% of the bill is good, is great.
Yeah, I don't remember the number that he laid on it.
I think he said about a third of it is just crap.
Yeah, I guess,
but
you're right.
That's the crap. That's the pork that we talk about so often that you have to have to get it across the finish line.
But he loves a good bit of the bill. He loves.
Well, you have Scott Bessent, who, you know, he's had a lot to say about a lot of different things here, not just over the past few days and weeks, but months. And he was talking about if those tax cuts aren't extended with this bill, and if I can find his exact words here, he said, so he issued a stark warning, if Congress fails to pass Trump's sweeping One Big Beautiful Bill Act, the U.S. could spiral into a financial crisis not seen since 2008. And he had Bessent in front of the House Ways and Means Committee yesterday. focused on the extension of that 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, said a lapse would trigger a $4 trillion tax hike and wreak havoc on the financial system and working Americans. The bill, which they want to pass by July 4th, also includes a $4 trillion debt ceiling increase. That's what some of these fiscal conservatives,
sure,
and of course your Rand Pauls and Thomas Massey's, that's the issue they have.
Yeah, they that's driving them absolutely nuts.
But you have Team Trump saying that will all be fixed with deregulation of businesses and further bills to come. And that's exactly what Tuberville said last hour. He said, we have to get this through for the tax cuts, and then bills that follow will help take care of the deficit issue. But the Trump team is saying, listen, we need the debt raised, the debt ceiling raised, because we need to spend more on certain things. Well, yeah, we're all talking about cutting costs. The border, need a lot more money for that.
And defense, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And with that in mind, you know, look at some of the tensions that are out there right now. China, for sure. Even though, did we get a trade deal? Is it a framework of a trade deal? Is it kind of sort of a trade deal?
I think it's a framework of a truce for the trade deal, is what it is.
And obviously what's going on in Israel with Gaza and all that, and now with Iran.
And it could escalate quickly. I mean, your story about moving military dependents out and moving non-essential out of the Middle East.
Yeah, so here's primarily what's going on right now. Now, if you miss some of this, tensions between the U.S. and Iran, they are escalating, prompting major precautionary moves from both the State and the Defense Departments. This week, the State Department authorized the withdrawal of diplomats from Iraq, with Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, who also appeared before a subcommittee.
That got pretty fiery, too.
That's what I saw, yeah. He approved the voluntary departure of U.S. military dependents from bases across the Middle East. These steps come as nuclear talks with Iran teeter on collapse. President Trump, in a podcast, I think he did a podcast with the New York Post.
Mm-hmm. Miranda Devine, I think.
Yeah, right. So that got released yesterday. So we got to hear a lot of that, including if he was going to make up quickly with
Elon.
Yeah, right. That was part
very nice. It's very nice that Elon apologized.
Yeah. Anyway, he was feeling less confident about securing a deal to curb Iran's nuclear program. At the same time, Iran's defense minister warned that U.S. bases across the region are within range of Iranian missiles and threatened severe retaliation if conflict breaks out. And then you've got Israel continuing to hint at direct military action unless Iran dismantles its nuclear ambitions. That's just one little tiny corner of the world where things could go haywire in an instant.
Yeah, and I thought it was strange. So I had a story yesterday, and I don't know if we ever got around to it, but as we negotiate with Russia and Ukraine to end that war, and we negotiate with Iran to end the development of nuclear weapons, the whole discussion right now is around whether we will continue to allow Iran to have their civilian nuclear program for energy, right? And you've had the Trump team go back and forth and say, no, we won't allow it at all. There's also been instances where they say, yeah, we will allow that to continue in a limited capacity, but they can't use nuclear to try to create a weapon. Well, then yesterday had this headline, Russia signed a contract to build 8 nuclear power plants in Iran and expand the civilian nuclear energy program. So I found that kind of interesting, that as Trump tries to get deals done with both of these countries in different capacities, that you still have Russia increasing the civilian nuclear program for Iran as these negotiations go on. And is this whole troop pullback and withdrawal, you have a lot of different takes on why it's happening. Some are saying that it's a bluff, which I could totally see as these negotiations continue. Or maybe not a bluff, but just assuming the fighting position, just in case. Then there's also people that are saying, no, what this is Netanyahu is going through with it, regardless of whether or not Trump wants Israel to attack Iran's nuclear facilities. Netanyahu's going to do it anyway. The Americans know that now, and so we're getting ready for it. Or there's the other option, which is America and Israel are just going to go for it, and that negotiations have gone so sideways that they've learned some new information and get ready for another war in the Middle East.
So this is all just in advance of what some are saying is going to happen, either Israel or Israel and America in coordination with one another.
Yeah, I think those are the three options. If anyone knows if there's a fourth option, let me know. That this is a bluff or just getting ready in case the deal goes completely sideways, or we know Israel's going to attack without us, or we're planning on both going in at the same time. I think those are the only three options.
British maritime officials also issued a rare warning to commercial shipping in the Persian Gulf, urging extreme caution due to the risk of escalating military activity. This story's got a lot of the word escalate in it, in one way or the other. Escalate, escalated, escalating. Adding to the uncertainty, General Michael Carrilla, head of U.S. Central Command, postponed a scheduled Senate testimony amid the growing volatility. He had previously briefed President Trump on a range of military strike options against Iran, like you just were talking about. And so it seems that something's going on here.
It does. And there's several good followers online for getting more up-to-date information on things that are going on. Of course, when they're trying to be first, they're often either misled or just plain wrong. But this is a really good follow. And Sean and I have been following this OSINT Defender online for a while now. Okay. OSINT, open source intelligence. But his latest posts, just to kind of update you this morning where things stand, New York Times said, Israel appears to be preparing to launch an attack soon on Iran, according to officials in the United States and Europe. And with that, you also have, like Dan said, the one of the Iranian defense ministers saying, get ready, American bases in the Middle East, because if that happens, we're coming right at you.
Yeah.
But also says here, as of 13 minutes ago, the U.S. Embassy in Israel has restricted the travel of diplomatic staff and their family members to the areas of Tel Aviv, Jerusalem, and Be'er Sheva due to heightened regional tensions with Iran. Similar actions were taken by the embassy prior to both attacks by Iran against Israel last year. Additionally, the U.S. Embassy reminds Americans in Israel to remain vigilant and maintain a high level of personal security awareness. Be prepared by knowing the location of the nearest shelter. Security incidents can occur without warning, including mortar, rocket, and missile attacks, as well as unmanned aircraft system intrusions. So drones, of course, top of mind. The situation remains complex and may change rapidly in the coming days, they say.
Wow. That was, in fact, when we got together this morning and looked all the news over, you were like, I think we're going to go with number one with this one. And as it turns out, even as the show progresses today, this morning, it looks like it's becoming even more and more pronounced number one story mm-hmm. across the world right now.
It does. But again, we've seen this happen before, and we've seen offensive and defensive positions taken, and then kind of a cooling of the heads for one reason or the other. So maybe it's all nothing. I'm just really, and I know I'm not the only one, really not looking forward to being dragged into another Middle East, fight. It's it's been 20 plus years, 30 years we've been doing that.
Did you think that Senator Tuberville, when we had him on an hour ago, that he tipped his hand to any of this? I didn't really notice that in the conversation we had. Now, we hit him with a couple of questions that weren't even related to this at all anyway. But it seemed like if something was imminent or if a U.S. senator would think that something was imminent, he might have talked more about it.
Did
he tip his hand in any way? I didn't really notice.
Not on this, and I don't see much concern from many in our government online right now about this. I'm sure there's some that have said something, but you can't escape that what's going on over there is something that normally happens before something big.
Yeah.
And we've all kind of been hoping that powder keg wouldn't explode.
Meanwhile, we've been just waiting for people with purple hair to go to sleep in Los Angeles and get out of the streets, where we've been a little distracted by that. 821, Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings. All righty, 825, FM Talk 106.5, Mobile Mornings. Rob Hulbert, Lanyap Mobile, will join us after 8:30. We got plenty to talk to him about, obviously, because he was covering that Davis thing for Veterans Affairs and all that for a long time in Lanyap, and now it's gotten to, I didn't even realize the lawsuit had been filed till yesterday because there was so much talk of a lawsuit, but now it has actually been filed by Davis against the governor.
Yeah, it has, and governor's office awfully confident, weren't they? Gina Maiola came out and said,
she said, we're good to go. We think we got this handled.
Yeah. Wow. You wonder what's going to come up in that hearings, those hearings, I guess I should say, and whether any more dirty laundry maybe from the Ivy administration comes out from there.
Here's Miola's exact quote, and it's short. We're extremely confident that Governor Ivy's necessary actions will stand any court test that there may be.
Hmm.
So that tells you how confident they are.
That's pretty straightforward. Also, a lot of talk with the Trump administration wanting to kind of break apart these departments and scatter them across the United States that are too close to D.C. And the FBI, one of those of main focus. And, of course, that's a big deal to us in Alabama because we have, you know, Quantico number two, or what do they call it, FBI? There's a nickname they have for Huntsville with it having the second most FBI agents living there. But leadership quietly considering a shift. And this isn't a, I don't know if this is a huge story or not, but they're planning, according to Dan Bongino, who's deputy director of the FBI now, and relocating the FBI's prestigious National Academy from Quantico to Huntsville. It's part of the Trump administration's effort to reduce the FBI's D.C. footprint and expand operations at Redstone Arsenal in Huntsville. So the National Academy, it trains law enforcement officers from the U.S. and internationally. It's not new FBI agent training. These are, it's almost, it seems to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, it seems like it's almost like the all-star game for great local law enforcement.
So you take somebody that you think has got a lot of promise, mm-hmm. and you send him there to get specialized training?
A 10-week class, yeah, and it's been held in Quantico, the National Academy. And again, I might be off on that. That's the way I kind of understand it, is their superior say, hey, you could be a great officer, you're already a good officer, why don't we send you here to this National Academy? Unlike the new FBI agent training, which would remain in Quantico, this 10-week program could soon have a new home here in Alabama. You have critics inside the FBI, I'm sure many of which don't want to move anywhere, argue the relocation is unnecessary and costly, and they recently spent on some big upgrades at Quantico. FBI Director Kash Patel and Deputy Director Bongino are both critical of the Bureau and have been since before they were appointed to those roles. So there you go. National Academy, if it does come to Huntsville, that'd be more people in the state and more money for the state, although they're saying it would be a pretty big hit economically to that area, which is always the argument you go to when you don't want something to leave. I don't know how big of a deal the National Academy
Quantico
is.
Quantico would be a big hit for them. Okay.
That's what they were kind of saying.
Yeah. Also, I mean, that'll be a drop in the bucket if Space Force eventually comes
Space
to the state
Command,
of Alabama.
Yeah.
Space Command. You know, I mean, that we're kind of waiting on this imminent, you know, messaging about that it's going to happen, though we're still kind of waiting.
Yeah.
It's like we're on the 2-yard line or something like that. That they would have you believe anyway.
Yeah, and they've made it sound like that for months, right? Both of our U.S. senators, you talk to the congressmen around the state, and they say, yeah, right after the new Air Force leader is officially let through by the Senate, then we'll be making that announcement, but we still haven't seen much at all. Randy from Foley texting in says, Top Gun of the FBI. Ricky texting in this morning on the text line, 251-343-0106, $16 trillion for COVID, and this, we're being robbed and destroyed. He said, Trump is a globalist, and Tommy is sold out already to Trump. Says, we're being robbed. Paul says, makes me wonder about domestic attacks if Israel strikes. That's another thing you have to think about. We're on high alert in the Middle East, with possibly even higher tensions between Iran and the U.S. and Iran and Israel. What might we see on the home front if things really do pop off?
Boy, after what we've seen in L.A. and these organized, funded disturbances, they are disturbing. They're working. 830 FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Mornings, and Rob Hulbert with Len Yap is on the way. Good morning. Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. This is where you come for all that good news. Mobile Mornings and FM Talk 106.5. Very uplifting show. Rob Hulbert with Lanyap Mobile is our guest right now. Every Thursday he joins us. Rob, good morning.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, we are doing great.
Great.
And Dan's not doing so great. I think
y'all seem a little divided on that one.
Well, you know, we just talked about 30 minutes about possible war between Iran and the U.S.
and Israel.
So, yeah. But I think even more pressing are some of the local issues we have right now. And there's a lot of those, you know.
Even more pressing than war with Iran.
Yeah. Well, yeah, if you think about it in a certain way.
Well, we're talking about war with Iran, then we have people calling the show and saying, hey, what's that forecast look like for Sunday?
Right, yeah. Well, okay. You know, got to keep your priorities straight. Yeah.
That's right. So and we can't do anything about the war in Iran.
But
Ivy, she's finally got that knock on the door. Hey, you're being sued by the former commissioner of the ADVA. Kent Davis files the lawsuit. I'm not sure if I'm surprised that it took this long, but it's out there now. And I know the governor's office seems confident that, well, they're not worried about this. But what do you think this will look like? Will we get some more juicy news from how the governor's office interacts with Davis and some of these other groups? Or what do you expect to come from all of this?
You know, it's a federal lawsuit that was filed yesterday. You know, for those who don't remember, Davis was fired by the governor. He was the head of the Veterans Board and administration, and he had filed an ethics complaint against the head of the Department of Mental Health, who is a cabinet member for Ivy, and that prompted a very quick response from the governor's office, and she basically ran him out of office over the objections of the Veterans Board itself, which she could not get to vote to remove him. And so she then called upon deep upon her supreme executive powers and then fired him over the objections of the board. So now he's suing, saying, hey, I want my job back. I want back pay. I want damages. It's an interesting lawsuit from the standpoint, especially since they've replaced him. So, you know, to get his job back, to do those things, it would be really kind of a wild circumstance. But
and basically, didn't the Attorney General, didn't Marshall come out and say there's nothing to this, if I remember correctly, kind of during that whole conversation? I'm wondering how much help he's going to get.
Whatever Steve Marshall says, he's going to play ball with whatever the administration says. I don't really put a lot of weight behind that. Once it goes to court, it's in court. It's in federal court. What is that going to mean? Is it going to mean Kay Ivey having to testify? I don't know. You know, those things, that would be a fascinating moment to see her on a stand. You know, I don't know if it'll get that far. My guess is, if I had to guess, if it gets anywhere close to actually going to court, if they can't get it thrown out ahead of time, then I suspect you'll see a settlement.
Well, that would be must see. Kay Ivey on the stand answering questions from.
It's not going to happen.
Not going to happen.
I mean, that would be a Biden moment part two. You know, it would be her out there stumbling around and unable to answer questions, and it would be. That's not going to happen. I mean, if she even, you know, it's assuming she's still in office when this comes to pass, I'm sure they will try to get summary judgment, get it thrown out, do those things. If it gets to the point where it looks like a trial is imminent, I would imagine that you're going to see this thing get shut down in some way, get a settlement of some sort.
But also, I wonder, you know, how serious is Admiral Davis about this? Does he want to fight this until the very end and try to get everything out there, or is he looking to maybe settle when the time gets right? If he's out for blood, this could get, you know, depending on what the courts do, like you said, they might just shut this thing down early. But if he's not willing to settle and he wants to take this to the end, it could get pretty fascinating.
Well, I mean, he's a rear admiral, you know, so, I mean, you know, he's probably a guy who's got a little bit of a constitution to get ready for a fight. But, you know, ultimately it's going to be how much time and energy is he willing to expend on it, because it probably will take some time, I would imagine. You know, that usually is the case. So, you know, all those things, it's going to be time and money and who's going to do it. Over time, people tend to just wear down on that sort of thing. And if there's a solution, especially with some admission of wrongdoing or whatever that comes about, that would probably be it. But I mean, you know, if it happens prior to Ivy leaving office, that would be pretty quick, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, that we have that too, because we just talked to Senator Tuberville last hour. So he's, of course, he said he'll have two jobs here soon. For, you know, one, he will remain the U.S. Senator. At the same time, Rob, he's got to turn his attention to trying to make sure that and secure at least the Republican nomination for governor. So he's going to be a busy guy.
Yeah, I think that's going to be, right now it looks like he'll be on cruise control for that part. But, you never know. You don't know who might jump in, and it's still a long way away. So there's certainly time for people to get in and time for things to happen, and you never know in politics this far out. I wouldn't say that anything is definitely going to happen, but he certainly at this point would look like the path has been laid out in front of him.
I'd say so. We're talking with Rob Hulbert, Lanyap, online at lanyapmobile.com, and a much closer election is all of these municipal elections around our area, and Mobile mayoral race down to six now. Stephen Nodine has withdrawn. Yeah. He said no chance he gets a hearing on restoring his rights to be mayor before the election. So he's out. Right. Also saying there's some political interference, though he didn't name the candidate that he believes is interfering with his campaign. But we're down to six, and Spiro Chiarigotis, who we'll have on tomorrow morning at 8, he continues to lead in campaign contributions.
Yeah, I mean, Spiro's not just leading. He's lapping the field by, an order of magnitude, and that's not just – I'm not trying to – be on anybody's side. I'm just saying that this is like when you look at the number of donations plus the amount of donations, it's really, he had 230,000 last month. The next closest was 70 something.
Wow.
So there's definitely from, and I mean, he had 200 plus donations versus I think 70 or so, it's a very big gap in that regard, which, that doesn't mean everything by any stretch, but it is especially when you see the number of donations, it does show a level of enthusiasm. I've heard, I've heard some of the other candidates saying, well, our candidates won't donate because people don't want to donate publicly because they fear retribution or they do whatever. That sounds like a cop out a little bit to me, but, right now he's definitely has the wind at his back, I think, in that regard. It does not mean everything by any stretch. That doesn't mean there's not going to be, somebody else that can win this thing.
He does certainly have, it's pretty obvious. I don't think anybody would be surprised to hear that he's got the blessing of the current administration, and more than the blessing, he's got the support.
The endorsement, yeah.
And the endorsement of the current administration, and that's playing a pretty big role in this, isn't it, Rob?
I mean, I think it helps certainly more than it hurts. I'm sure it hurts with some people.
Sure.
When you're in office for 12 years, as Mayor Stimson has been, you make some enemies. There's some folks who aren't happy with him. Overall, I would say that the vast majority of people in the city are pretty happy with the job he's done. I think if he were running for re-election, he would win easily. So I would imagine it helps Spiro some, but more than it hurts. But I don't know that that's the same sole reason people are going to vote for him.
Yeah, and another fun game we like to play around here leading up to elections is who's winning the yard sign game too, not just in polling. And I really need to put it out to the listeners. I haven't gotten a good poll yet for whose yard sign you're seeing most around. I will say in my neck of the woods, I'm seeing a ton of Connie Hudson signs. I'm seeing some Spiro signs. I'm seeing a Prine sign or two, some Drummond signs. But in my neck of the woods, kind of right there at University and Greelot, a lot of Connie Hudson signs.
I like to play the illegal sign game. I like to see who has the most signs illegally placed in public media, that kind of thing. That's what I like.
But, yeah. And when they start putting signs in front of other signs, that's always fun, too.
Yeah. That's a good one, too. There's all sorts of good sign games. And then the people who call and say, oh, everybody's stealing our signs. Welcome to politics. I don't know. But, I think you're right. I think it's like different parts of town seem to have more signs for one candidate than others, and I think if you go out west you see more Connie Hudson or you see more Paul Prine. You're in Spring Hill or you Midtown, you see a lot of Spiro Chiarigotis. You see that, so I think this, I don't know what that tells us.
I don't either.
Yeah, it tells us something. I just don't know what it is.
It's
I don't know. I can't read those tea leaves right now.
Well, if say that if we were to assume that Spiro has got the momentum and maybe polling wise would have the lead, what's unusual about this is a little bit like, who is he? I mean, he really wasn't known much to the public. He was a judge, obviously, but other than that, he really has not been a public official that's had everybody's attention for a long time, like some of the other candidates.
Yeah, they've been in the headlines for years, these other candidates.
Yeah.
I mean, some have, you know. I mean, certainly Connie Hudson has, and Barbara Drummond.
Yeah,
Prine.
You know, some of the others have. Yeah, I mean, Prine was in the headlines for a little bit, and not necessarily for the right reasons. And, so, I mean, it's like, you know, there's some, you know, I would say certainly Connie Hudson has served for a long time and has, I mean, been on the city council and the county commission. So, you know, she's a pretty well-known quantity. Certainly Barbara Drummond has been in public office for some time now. And also she worked in Sam Jones administration.
Right.
So if you like the Sam Jones administration, that helps her, you know, that, so, I mean, she definitely has some of that, some of that gravitas for her in that, you know, among his supporters. But, you know, I don't, why, where is he coming from? I think it's just, you know, he's out there hustling and he's talking to people. So, you know, apparently he's doing well with getting out there. I don't know. We don't have any official polls yet.
We'll find out tomorrow.
We don't have anything.
He'll be with us tomorrow, so we'll get an impression in that way.
Yeah, get a good.
You'll get an impression from your listeners. Yes.
Yeah,
that's right. Rob, also, and I hope you guys talked about this in the podcast this week, but the Mardi Gras dance teams, and I really hate this for my friend Dan.
Who
just joined a Mardi Gras dance team.
I did.
He's looking forward to dancing on the route for the first time this next year.
So,
but
I was looking forward to it. Now we may be sidelined.
Don't think that the fact that they're considering banning some of these groups has anything to do with Dan joining one.
So they're saying, now the reasoning, and I've heard people complain that the dancing, especially from the youth, a little too risque in some of these parades. That's been a complaint, but with the Mobile Mardi Gras Parading Society, basically they're saying the reason they're looking into taking some of the dancers off the route is because they're slowing parades down by too much.
Yeah, and I think when people say that it's too risque, I don't know if they're really aware of what they're talking about here, because what they're talking about are private dance troops, the private dancers, as Tina Turner would say.
Yes, she did.
so, you know, they're independent groups. The other, I don't think anybody's talking about having the school bands stop marching, and when you're out watching people hump the barricades, they usually have a trombone in their hand. It's, you know, so, I mean, it's not, I don't know that this is going to end that. I'm just saying, you know, it's, I mean,
that just gave a great image. That was hilarious.
I mean, just saying, you know, I mean,
we've all seen it.
That's who's doing it. I mean, it's the bands, it's the school bands, which always just makes me think, like, you know, when is the band, you know, the guy running the show for the school, and the band director out there saying, okay, today we're learning how to air hump. I don't know. What is that? I mean, that seems to me like something that they could handle at the school level. But,
yeah.
Well,
I don't know so I don't really know that is the reason for it.
Okay.
I mean, it may just be what they're saying, that they think it slows things down.
Done high school football with Jim Cox for 25 years, and they haven't slowed it down in that time at all.
Yeah, right.
It's not really a Steely Dan move, but it's musical in a way.
Yeah, it's definitely a Rolling Stones
move. It's a crowd pleaser, I would say, overall. You know,
it's a crowd pleaser for the portion of the crowd that is pleased.
They love to see it. You know, people go crazy when they see it. It's certainly a little risque.
Well, Rob, I'm sure preparations have begun for our next big Nappies Award ceremony. We're all looking forward to that here in a few months. For folks who want to sign up to Lanyap Online, which I still insist is the best way to get your news, how can they get that going? And also, you know, we talked about the podcast. You guys talk every week. It's always really good.
Thank you very much. Yeah, the award-winning Wagnapod. We've once again won first place in the state for our podcast, which you can hear at
mobile.com.
And that one actually is not, it is out there with that you can listen to for free. It is not a subscription, not necessary for that. But while you're there, get a subscription because it helps keep us doing what we do. And, you know, we're out there doing the reporting that nobody else is doing around here. So keep us going. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Helps us out.
You're keeping us funky, Rob.
Yes, we're trying.
Keeping
we're trying.
Funky. Thanks. We'll talk in a week, okay?
All right, guys. Have a great weekend. Bye.
There you go. Rob Hulbert, Lanyap. Sign up online, lanyapmobile.com, and we'll wrap up Mobile Mornings on the way right after this.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Porch Show is next. What a good lineup he's got today, huh?
Yeah, former Congressman Mo Brooks joins Jeff just after 9:30. And he said he doesn't want to run for office, but he might just have to. We'll see if they talk about that some. Former Secretary of State John Merrill in Hour 2. Also see if what his political aspirations are. And then Bradley J. with Breitbart. Tons of national news to discuss with him on the Jeff Poor Show coming up just after 11:30. April Marie Fogle in for Sean Sullivan on Midday Mobile today, so you don't want to miss that either. Jason says, can Dr. Bill tell us the chances of the anti-Trump loons getting rained out Saturday? I don't know if they'll be rained out. I think we had an 80% chance of rain Saturday, and it'll probably be again.
80%?
I believe that's what I saw. Let's see. Wow. Saturday. Chance of precipitation, 80%.
Oh, wow.
Saturday night,
okay.
30% chance of showers. But if that's in the afternoon, you know, this No Kings protest set for, I think, 12 o'clock on Saturday, and I think in front of Government Plaza. But Jason also asks, what's your opinion of the Fox 10 story about Sheriff Birch that mentioned his comments on Midday? Seemed like a different Sheriff Birch, and Brendan Kirby trivialized the radio show, in my opinion. I didn't feel Brendan, who we're friendly with here, didn't feel like he trivialized the station or the show at all. I think he was, he just let Birch respond, and that's been on every channel. They've had Birch's response or his comments following those comments on Midday Mobile, where he said exactly what we said and what was obvious if you were listening, that he was asked a question if protests in Mobile do somehow become as violent as they are or were in LA and some other places, what would you do? And he said, this is what we would do. And he was heated after seeing what had been going on in LA the last few days. Remember, it's quieted down these last two nights, but the day he came in was right after
still
it really
going on
started amping up. And so I don't think anything's going to really come out of that protest on Saturday. I know that Mara Mandick, one of the rally sponsors for Indivisible Mobile, they're going after Birch for those comments. I guess they've been the ones hosting these protests every weekend. They've done 7 or 8.
Yeah, but they kind of calmed down then. I mean, then they saw Birch come back and make a statement and say, look, this is where the comments came from. This was the framing of it all, and I don't expect any problems downtown.
But I don't think she's getting it either. She's saying, hey, we've done this before, and we don't riot. If anything happens, it won't be us. And I think the sheriff, yeah, it's not necessarily you that's the worry. It's other people that come in and try to make a more violent or a bigger scene than what's already going on with locals that are headed down.
Well, but if you were the only one doing a protest, whatever the protest this weekend, you would feel kind of like you've been picked on a little bit. I think that's what. But she came back and said, "Look, he then acknowledged that we've never had a problem in the past, and we're probably going to be good to go." I've got more regard for actual peaceful protest now after what I saw in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
Peaceful protest, your butt off. I'm fine.
Just don't let it turn into anything more. Leo and several others mentioning also the Big Creek Lake, as we were talking about the Mobile mayoral race and Connie Hudson and Barbara Drummond. We'll maybe get into that more tomorrow morning. We'll also have Spiro Cherry guide us on at 8 o'clock. Jeff Porcho on the way next.